Hi, y'all. I'm Katie Parker. I am an alcoholic. I hope you like me. Trust me, that is important to everybody in this room. I always love it when they say, you know, you got to check your ego at the door. I always say, how do you do that? Check your ego at the door. Let me meet the alcoholic that can do that. I've had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984, and for that I'm truly grateful. My husband is Charlie, and there he is. Honey, stand up. You always make me stand up. Yeah, you do. You make me do this female thing. There you go. I do want you to know that I have 5.5 months more sobriety than my husband. People say time doesn't matter. Yes, it does. And in our house, when he struggles just a bit, I always tell him it'll make a little bit more sense in about 5.5 months. Honey, just hang in there. Hang in there. Work with me. Work with me. My home group is the primary purpose group. In Austin, we study the big book line by line and week after week. And you know that? I got to be honest with you. There was a time in my 27 years of sobriety that was not appealing to me. Today, it is very appealing to me. And one of the things that I have learned today is that every answer to every problem I have is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm telling you, I did not stand behind that for many, many years in AA. Didn't really know I wasn't, but I wasn't. And so on Tuesday nights at 7:30 at Faith United Methodist Church, if you're ever in the area, please stop by. We have over 200 people studying the big book, which is pretty unbelievable. Yeah, we're reintroducing the big book back into AA, one page at a time. You know, I got to tell you, first I'd like to thank the committee for having me. This is always an honor and a privilege to stand here and to share my story. It's one of the things I like to always say is in 27 years, a lot has happened. I have a lot of experience, some good, some not so good. But I'll go all over the map with it, and I hope you follow me in this journey because it's a very interesting journey. It's not so much about my drinking. My story has very little of my drinking in it. I do qualify myself, but I like to talk about my 27 years of sobriety. But one of the things that I got to tell you about Aspen, we fly into Denver, which is just, you know, can you puke on the plane? Maybe just once flying into Denver. Have you guys, you come in and you're rocking and you're like, oh my God, I'm getting ready to puke on a plane. What is it about flying into Denver that makes me so sick? We fly everywhere, right? And then you drive this drive that there's signs all the way that are like, your life is in danger. Your brakes may go out. We have several runaway places for the 18-wheelers when they're barreling down. And then the signs go more, it gets better and better. It goes, really? No, we mean it. We mean it. And if your brakes do go out, don't get off the road. What? What? Oh, my God. I told Charlie, I go, how do brakes go out? And then he decides to explain the brake system. You're like, too much information, honey. Just curious to know what's going on. But, by the time you're just like, and your son here is very bright, very, very bright. I swear, I got the visor down. I got the little side thing down. I got my sunglasses on. I'm like going, Jesus, it's just so bright. And then all of a sudden you get behind a mountain and it's like you're in the dark. You know, you take the sunglasses off, lift the visor up. Oh, back down with the visor, back this way, back with the sunglasses. Oh, you know, oh my God. I swear I was pit sweating. And my husband, I never get to drive, but he's over there just going, I'm like, oh, honey, I'm driving. I am driving. And I swear he's like a cat in a car, you know, the whole time I'm driving, making me crazy. But I get the honor of speaking with my dear friend Bob Darrell, who's one of my heroes in AA, and my other buddy Ralph White, who really, I believe, I got to speak with his brother a few weeks ago in Reno, Ron, and I think I could have been y'all's baby sister. I'm not kidding. I mean, all the boys' name starts with an R except Willie, the first, and could you see me as Ruby White? I mean, couldn't I? The mama needed a baby girl, and so did you boys. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you guys needed a little girl in that family. Six boys. You always going to say a moment of silence for your mother. But so it's always an honor and privilege. My husband speaks tomorrow. We're going to be doing a workshop at 4 o'clock, and the title is Celibacy. So if you... So if you're up for that, come on down. That's not it. Kidding you. Just joking you. Just pulling your chain. But, you know, and I also want to tell you, I met Karen. Karen, where are you? There you are. Karen was telling me she's a nurse, and she said, you know, with altitude, you got to be careful because, you know, the way altitude sickness shows up is a headache, indigestion, and gas. Lovely. I'm looking forward to that. It's always nice to meet new people and a lot of gas, isn't it? I swear, they're talking and you're thinking, I'm just holding it. Okay, I'm just about to blow here any minute, ma'am. And the other thing in your state is that people say to layer. I am from Texas. My layer is a shirt and a bra. That is layering, you know. There is no layering. I don't even have the apparel that layers. It'd be like putting one shirt on top of another shirt and they're both the same size. So you're just stiff. Oh. Well, golly gee whiz, I guess I better get on with my story. Okay, so, and I'll tell you, the dress I was going to wear had sleeves, but, I mean, I sweat like a pig up here, and I swear the sweat stains would be down to here, and I look like a linebacker by the time I'm done. I get pretty lathered up here. My husband says I'm a little bit like taking a drink out of a fire hose. You get a little bit more than you were expecting, okay? So that will not be hard for you to see my personality, and I rarely drink throughout my talk, but this is like being in the desert. I mean, you get a dry spot like here. How do you quench that? I mean, you're just like, that's attractive. That and gas, I'm feeling right at home, man. Can't wait to come back to Aspen. I mean, really think about it. I mean, those people up there on the hill, you know they're just farting all the way down, don't you know that? You know that. That's just giving them some fuel to shoot them on down. Oh, okay. Well, I got sober when I was 26 years old, and I'm 54 years old, and, you know, I am clearly on the back nine, right? That's one of the things. You know, when you're over 50, you are clearly on the back nine. Would you agree with me on that one? Yeah. Yeah, unless I'm going to live to be 110. So, you know, I'm clearly on the back nine. I do like to believe that I'm not putting on the 18th hole today. You know what I mean? I mean, I'd like to think I got another 50 in me. But one of the things that the book says is the most satisfying years of our existence lies ahead. And I ask you to lay your experience up against that. Are the most satisfying years of your existence right now? Because I believe that not everybody in the room can answer yes to that question. There was a time in my sobriety where it was absolutely not like that. But you sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you just put that smile on your face and you're dying in the rooms of AA. And that's a lot of what my talk will be about, is about the people that are dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous of untreated alcoholism. And so I take it pretty passionately, and you'll see that as that shows up. But I have always believed that in AA I am the vessel. I am merely the vessel. I'm the vessel to get you connected to the power. I am not the power. You do not want Katie running your life. Oh, my God. I don't know who you should date. I don't know what job you should take. I don't know what car you should buy. I can certainly give you some ins and outs on that stuff. I can give you my own experience on that stuff. But I got to get you connected to the power to learn what you need to do. And that is what my job is. And let me tell you something. I have learned in AA that you really, everybody in this room can get connected to the power. You got to know that the power is available. If you're questioning if you've entered the world of the Spirit, I bet you haven't. I bet you still got an intellectual God like I had for years. I had a God here that I brought in as a pitch hitter when I needed him. God, I need you now bad. Come on, dude, talk to me. And that was all I had. And then the rest of the time, I was just a damn good manager. I could manage my life. And so this is my story. I love in the book where it talks on page 29, it says, you know, it says in How It Works, most of us say, you know, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. You know, I like to go with each individual describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he has established this relationship with God. That's what I want to talk about, is how I have established this relationship. See, I was alcoholic. I suffer from a disease that started long before I took a drink. And when I look back at my life as a kid, I was driven. I was absolutely driven as a kid. I had to be the best at everything. That's how self manifests for me. If you're the person that's invisible in life, you could be somebody that nobody even remembers your name ever. You're that personality that is just, you can just see right through you. Doesn't make you any less alcoholic than I am. It's just different how self manifests for you. That's what's so important to remember. This is self-manifested in various ways is what caused my failure. I was the kind of kid that you couldn't tell me I couldn't do it. Don't you dare, devil dog, dare me. I swear it was Red Rover, let Katie come over. And I mean, I was just... And I'd take about 9 of you out. I mean, I was the best at softball. I was the best at everything. Because that's what I had to be okay. And today, I'm equally as driven. Don't get me wrong. It's very important that you like me the best this weekend. I got to work on that because not everybody does. Obviously, Gigi didn't at first. But, you know, so what ended up happening? And, you know, when you think about it, you look back at your childhood and you just go, you know, whatever. But when you get sober, you look at it with a different pair of glasses on. And so all of a sudden, I was the third born, right? And fast forward into my life, my booze was just ran freely in my home. We were very much like madmen. My dad was a heavy drinker. He had played in the NFL. He was a professional football player. I mean, we partied hard at my house. My mother was a beautiful woman. And the next thing you know, I'm 8 years old. She gets very, very sick. She goes into the hospital. Boom, dies of a kidney disease, just basically overnight. And, you know, it's 1966, you know, it wasn't all about, you know, grief groups and set balloons aside. I'm still a little leery of all that anyway, but no, so be it. And, you know, that it was just a moment where you just are sad and you move on. And what ended up happening is my dad married 3 times in 18 months. So just, yeah, just swallow that one. And, you know, and here he was clearly a player. But besides being a player, he was looking desperately for a mother for his 3 kids, right? We were all 2 years apart. And this is the deal that I realized today. I would have told you I did tell you this, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that made me alcoholic. I was desperate to figure out what made me alcoholic. And I would have told you, if your mother died when you were 8 years old and your dad remarried 3 times in 18 months and had 4 live-in housekeepers, you'd be alcoholic too. And today what I understand is that just influenced my old ideas. I'm telling you what, I got some old ideas. I got old ideas from 2 weeks ago. How do you like that? I got old ideas from coming into Alcoholics Anonymous in day 1 as I do as day 27. And my old ideas change all the time. One minute I'm standing firm in something. Here's a beautiful old idea. You'll love this one. That you don't sleep with a newcomer. Oh, I swear, one more woman have that on her inventory. Bob. You know, he's always hitting on the newcomers. And I go, well, I mean, that's good moral ground to stand on, and I do agree with that. It is challenging. However, all of a sudden, I become a widow in Alcoholics Anonymous. In walks a guy who's trying to get sober. He's brand new sober. He's a widow, too. He's a little different. See, I might, well, you know what? He might stay sober. So all of a sudden, my old idea changes, and I can go ahead and see it's okay for me. I can go ahead and sleep with the newcomer because it's different. And that's what I mean. These things just flip right and left and right. They're inside out. And that's what I lose sight of. I absolutely lose sight of the fact that I am driven by my old ideas, and I don't even know what they are. They're just driving me. They show up in fear, resentment, all kinds of things. And that's why my sponsor and I, we are huge about inventory. I mean to tell you, for me, I'm a shapeshifter, man. My ego is a shapeshifter. It changes every time. All of a sudden, I finally identified a character defect. It looks like a dog. And then all of a sudden, a bird flies by. And I go, well, that's not it. That's a bird. But it's my ego has shifted. And it's just coming at me at another angle, man. This disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Don't ever lose sight of that. Don't ever lose sight of the fact that just because you have time means you're less susceptible to what this disease will do to you, right? And so I, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm in this family and my dad's bringing through all these women and oh my God, it's just chaotic. So we basically have 7 women come through our house in an 18-month period and we've lost our mother. And so the next thing you know, I mean, I'm rebelling. I take my first drink at about 12 years old and I'll never forget it. I remember exactly where I was standing. My brother mixed the depth charge, slammed it down, loved the burn, loved it. Knew at that moment that I was going to enjoy that moment in time. I had no idea it was going to move to the forefront of my life, but I absolutely loved what it did to me. Now, 12 years old, it is not easy to drink. Would you agree? I mean, you're not just walking in a bar at 12 years old. And so you can only steal your parents' booze for so long. I have extensive use with outside issues. Don't get me wrong. It was much easier at 12 years old to find those in Houston, Texas. But what we did, and this is the part that, this part of my story cracks me up because it never came to light until I got sober. But me and two other girlfriends would ride our little Schwinn bicycles up to the 7-Eleven. And you'd sit in front of that 7-Eleven and you'd wait for that creepy guy to pull up. And I swear, the women always nod their head. Oh yeah, I know where you're going with this, sister. Yeah. I feel you. Yeah, I know how to do that too. And so you wait for creepy guy to pull up. You gotta wait for a few and then there's my mark. And you go up to him and say, hey, can you buy us some booze? And he looks at you and he goes, I certainly can. And we're 12. And this guy's probably, I used to think he was 100, but he was probably about 40, maybe 30. And the biggest trick was to get rid of creepy guy, right? I mean, that was, when he gave you the booze, you got on your bike and you headed for the woods because he was in his car. Now, creepy guy wanted to go with you because that's what creepy guys do. But you just had to get rid of him. I mean, you had to lose him like flicking a booger off your finger. It wasn't easy. It was, and then he's gone. Okay, we're out of here. Okay. And here's the best part of this story, though. Creepy guy is in the room right now. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's one of us. Yeah. Yeah, he may have issues other than alcoholism, but he's one of us. Yeah, there he goes. He raised his hand. That's a good man. And here's the thing about that, guys. Now, and I like to move into this because, you know, people say that we're not to share our opinion behind this podium. Well, you know what? I'm going to. Of course. You know, this is no surprise. I had one girl snap at me, you know, you're not supposed to share your opinion. It's like, well, okay, I did. Huh? How do you like that? Huh? So, this is, you know, because there are some things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have a lot of experience with. And that, one of them, guess what, is being a woman. Huh? How do you like that? But I think what ends up happening is, in Alcoholics Anonymous, when a woman comes into these rooms and you take away the booze, the first thing that comes up is sex. Of course it does. We had the power. And with that power, we use it. Now, that doesn't mean you're getting laid. But I can sure be sweet to you to be able to borrow your truck to move my stuff. I'll be talking to the guy that nobody talks to because I need your truck. I'll laugh at your stupid jokes. You know what I'm saying? And I'll get what I need. Because that's what we women do until we move into this spiritual place. And so what ends up happening, though, is we can work you guys like a rented mule. And we get you, we can. And we get you thinking that we got, you know, creepy guy is bugging me. And so we go up to somebody and we say, you know, so creepy guy is really bothering me. Would you get him off of me? When in fact, I'm just shooting for some other mark in the room. And I need this, I have managed to attract creepy guy because he's easy to attract. All you got to do is get up for coffee about five times and he's on you like a, you know, a moth to the light, you know. And this one little girl in our home group, I swear she was making me crazy. She'd get up for coffee doing this number. And you're like, oh, honey, stop shaking it. You know, we got tables set up. And so she came up to me and was talking to me. I said, I saw you get up and you had every boy in treatment's eyes on you, you know. And I said, here's the deal, honey. You can't stay sober like that. You can get laid, but you can't stay sober like that. I'm worried about you getting sober. So don't lose sight, guys, of what's going on there. The prettier a woman is, the more dangerous it is because women don't want to talk to her and the men do, right? And that's not every man. Don't get me wrong. I'm just talking about the crowd. And in this room, we got to take that pretty woman when she comes up to the men and she says, I don't like women. You go, you know what? I got somebody I want you to meet. Her name is Katie. Here she is. And you just dump her off on me and I'll take over from here. So I'm a big fan of doing that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because see, I was the 12-year-old who was picking my mark in front of the 7. Yeah, do clap for that. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be said. And by golly, we need to do it, right? And we women really, really need to step up. When a woman walks in, we need to be the first ones to go up to her and not just watch her to be sure if we do or don't trust her. Of course we don't trust her. Come on. It's, you know, that's what we got to do. And so So, you know, you fast forward. So this is, you know, I'm 12 years old. I'm drinking like crazy. I'm still, you know, one of the things that I got to tell you is I cheated all my way through school. I've never been a big fan of education. It's just never been my cup of tea. And one of the things behind education, yeah, and, you know, and it took a ton of inventory for me to realize that I was absolutely driven to get that diploma. Driven to get that diploma. Because, see, if I didn't get that diploma, you'd think I was a loser. And the inventory taught me that. Thank God for inventory. Inventory is for me to see it from an entirely different angle. And so that inventory taught me that. And if that inventory taught me that, what I ended up realizing is I'm not stupid. Just because I don't like education doesn't make me stupid. Matter of fact, I'm quite a successful businesswoman. I just retired December 3rd, and I've been in the fitness business for 30 years, and they did a whole spread in the Austin paper on me retiring. Well-known fitness professional, loved, retires after 30 years. Who gets that? I'm like, and uneducated. Put that in there. Go ahead. Come on. But one of the wonderful things behind that, guys, is I realized I didn't need education to make me okay. See, we'll stuff anything in that black hole. And the reason I say this, because a lot of people will come into Alcoholics Anonymous, if alcoholism robbed you of your education, then by all means, go back and get it for the right reason. But if you go back to get it just because you think it's going to make you okay, it's a very dangerous thing, because everybody I work with has a tendency, it pulls them away from AA. Because for some reason, they got to make straight A's. When did that happen? You know? And they got to make straight A's, and the next thing, they're trying to work, and they're trying to go to school, and they're trying to raise their family, and what's going to fall off? AA falls off. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. But, so what ended up happening is, I got to tell you guys, my education, oh my gosh, does it rear its ugly little head from time to time not having it. You know, this altitude thing. I'm sitting with my daughter in Washington, right? We're looking over the Puget Sound. It's just beautiful. And I said, honey, I am so tired. I said, what type of altitude are we at right now? She's like, mother, you're at sea level. No kidding, huh? So that's what that whole sea level thing is about. And I said, but there's Mount Rainier. She goes, you have to be on it, mother. You have to be on the mountain to be affected by the altitude. And then you'll have gas and a headache. Okay, I'm with you now. I'm on it. But there was a guy who'd come into our meeting, and he was from Norway. And oh my God, I got to tell you, I got a sponsee. We call each other Dumb and Dumber. And she is just like me. I mean, it is amazing. And so this guy, she says, he's from Norwegia, isn't he? And I said, silly, he is Norwegian. And I sort of, the people all standing around us were kind of like. And then I come from, my husband's family is all educators. That's like a curse for me. I mean, they really think they can change me. They think if they take me to a museum, I'm going to enjoy it. No, I've been to the Vatican. I would have rather been at the coffee shop. Bunch of dead popes laying around, man. You know, I mean, I'm like, whatever. Once one tapestry looks like another tapestry, I wanted to whistle in the Sistine Chapel, whatever that is. And, but my husband, I'll ask him, I'll say, honey, how do you spell this? And he'll go, let's sound it out. Just last week, he goes, Katie, I bought a really exciting book for you to read. I do read it from time to time. And I'm the kind of reader who likes to read a pretty good smut mystery novel. And it just is like, blah, 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 when they're explaining the house. You know, it's like, go in there, you're going to murder them. Just walk in, murder the person. But I don't need to know that it's a white picket fence and the shutters are red, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, I bought you To Kill a Mockingbird. And I swear I got so pissed off. I go, let me tell you something, Charlie. You are not going to get me to read these stupid classics. You got it? And I mean, we went into an instant fight. And he had bought Catcher in the Weeds or the Rye or the whatever. And I said, you know, and then he leaves it on the kitchen table and I just want to shred it. It's like, I can do this. But you know, the truth of the matter is, guys, is what makes me alcoholic is I can't stop starting. That's my problem. I got an allergy that shows up in the phenomenon of craving, and I got an obsession, no matter if it's good or bad, that will take me back to the drink. So see, I cannot, once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. That's what makes me alcoholic. And so what I like to talk about is when I got sober. Once I got all this down, and I chase a boy into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'd spent the day with him. He told me he was sober. I didn't get it. I did not understand even that term. And, I mean, how many of you guys know that this terminology, serenity, what is that word? You know, I don't get what you're talking about. I chase him into Alcoholics Anonymous. He's got 6 years. I got 10 minutes. And I'll tell you something. I knew long before I walked into that room of AA that I had a problem. That was not new news to me. I had a 5-year-old child. I know pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You drag a kid with you while you're drinking, it's horrifying what happens in their life. Horrifying. The times I stayed asleep while that little girl was 3 years old playing in the front yard. Terrible. Terrible, terrible. And today I understand, now she's 33 years old, she loves her mother. A lot of rebuilding has gone on, a lot of rebuilding. I have 3 grandbabies. And, well, yeah, the oldest one was 6 on Monday. God love him. He loves me. They are God's do-over, aren't they, you guys with grandbabies? They are, for the drunk, they are God's do-over. And I love what Max will say to me. He'll go, Graham, can I have a popsicle before dinner? I'm like, have 3. I don't care. Run with the scissors. Watch cartoons all day. I don't care. See, I'm no longer the disciplinary. You are to be crazy about me. That's all that matters. But so I chased Joe into AA, and it was funny. He came from the Pacific Group. He's a Texas boy, but he lived in California for a long time. And he was raised on principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was raised on the whole service structure and principles and everything. And he kept saying, Katie, this is all wrong. And I'm like, no, it's not. Step into my vortex. You know what we women do. Come, come. Every time he'd say it's wrong, no, it's not. Come forth, come forth. And he and I were married for 20 years. You know, I am so glad that no one was the arbiter of our sex life. You know, who is to say if it's going to work or not? Now, I'll tell you, you should put your seatbelt on. The road's going to be bumpy. Oh, it's going to be bumpy. You get into a relationship, everything shifts to relationship problems. You know what I mean? In AA. But is that wrong? Well, you know, so be it. I mean, this is going to be something new we're going to talk about. And that's one of the things that I love to say in AA. I am not going to be the arbiter of your sex life until we get onto page 70 where it becomes troublesome. When sex becomes troublesome, you may drink behind it. Oh, then you're going to talk to me. Then we're going to talk. But the truth of the matter is Joe and I were married. I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot even begin to tell you guys. The laughter was just, it just went through me. I hadn't laughed in so long. I was so miserable. I was a single mother. I was bitter and angry. And I had walked in these rooms. I was one of the lucky ones. I really do consider myself one of the lucky ones. I loved the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous from day one. And that's not everybody's experience. And I had no idea what was going to happen with that fellowship. I had the women coming up to me, and they were taking my phone number. I loved that. Take my phone number, because when you expect me to call you, I'm not going to do it. Most people are not going to call a complete stranger when they're having a hard time. But they called me and called me and called me and picked me up. And, of course, Joe moved in 19 days. So that was nice. But, I swear, I will never forget him sitting there looking at me going, Katie, this is not right. It was like, shh, stop saying that. I'd put cards under his pillow. He'd read me the big book. I'd sit at his feet. Oh, please, read me more. You know, and everybody might say something about that was wrong. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. I learned the big book by him. I didn't have a sponsor. He was it. We did everything wrong you're not supposed to do. You know? And it worked. Go figure. But so what ended up happening, though, is at 3 years sober, I did get a girl that listened to my inventory, but I took almost everything to Joe. And so at 3 years sober, I got to the place to where somewhere in my sobriety, I believed, because I believe this today, I believe the guy with under 5 years, 3 years, 5 years, is still very much asleep to the disease of alcoholism. I believe the disease of alcoholism is selfishness and self-centeredness. See, I remember reading that in the book, and I was voted most likable in high school 4 years in a row. Yeah. So, see, I didn't suffer from that. Charlie did. But I didn't. And I knew Charlie in AA. He became our very dear friend. He was 6 months sober, and, well, I was a year because I had 5.5 months more than him. And so, but one of the things about that, guys, is that I would watch Charlie's behavior, and his self-centeredness was so obvious. And I didn't have it. And at some point, I remember thinking, I only had it when I drank. But I don't have it in sobriety. Now, if I was just outright rude to you, I did know to clean that up. But what I thought is that AA was for drinking, and that codependency recovery therapy was for living, and that church was for spirituality. Nobody told me that. I came up with that all on my own. And so at 3 years sober, Joe said, hey, Katie, what do you think about going to church? And all kinds of great things were happening in our life. It was fabulous. We had another baby. He had adopted my daughter. We had the white picket fence. Everything was wonderful. The gifts of sobriety took me away. I see it happen every day in AA. All of a sudden, you get the better job. You get the bigger house. You get the bigger car. You get the wife or the husband. And you get busy because you got bills. And I mean, I love AA. I cut back on my meetings. Not only have you cut back on your meetings, but your 12 steps long since been swept under the rug. I'm assuming that it happened to me. I see it a lot in AA. And the reason I see it is because it happened to me. It's very easy to see when you watch people in the rooms. And so Joe says, hey, let's go to church. And I'm like, I don't like that idea at all. I'm kind of bored with AA. As a matter of fact, I started picking you guys off. How many of y'all know that one at your home group? Oh, here goes Big Head Doug. Blah, 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 blah. He's going to talk for 20 minutes. There's Bandana Brian doesn't have squat. You know. And that's what I ended up doing, is I was killing the only thing that was going to save my life. I didn't know that. How do you know what you don't know? My buddy Mark Houston used to say that. And so I'm killing off everybody in AA. I thought, you know what, church might be okay. I was a little leery. We go into this non-denominational church. Oh, my God. I had been raised Catholic where they were speaking Latin, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? I mean, it couldn't be any more dry. Dry, dry, dry as a popcorn fart. You know what I'm saying? I mean, dry. And so I go into this church, and they got these big old overhead things, and everybody's singing. And, I mean, they got this going on, and it's young people. And I walk in, I'm thinking, oh, I could fall into this really easy. Before you know it, you know, you're just singing, hallelujah, right? I know I can't sing well at all. My husband tells me that, but I think I can. That's all I'm giving you. So, and so the next thing you know, I get so knee-deep involved in church. And I swear to God, you guys, I found Jesus. No! Do you know that AA member that finds Jesus? And I had to come back to AA to tell you heathens, you're on the wrong path. And don't get me wrong. Book says we need to incorporate this. But what I did is I put it instead of. And so, I mean, I went absolutely stark, raven, sober in church. I mean, at one point, Joe and I looked Amish. I even started wearing underwear. How do you like that? See, we blend. We blend. We think we blend. The book, I love it. The book says we are an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though we usually don't think so. Right? We had these little home church groups, you know, where we're sitting around doing all our little home. Well, I'm used to AA, where everybody's going to be real honest. And everybody's just looking at us horrified. And I swear, if one more person said, we are praying for you and Joe. Praying. And I thought, I go, come on, you got, bring it. I looked at one guy, he's like 400 pounds. I said, come on, dude, you got to have something. You got to be really unhappy in that 400-pound body. And I swear the group is going. And I thought, I'm trying to be helpful. And that's where we get totally delusional. I had drifted so far away. Now, I'd kept my AA friends, as many that would stay. Charlie stayed. But he was not happy with my Christian values. And, you know, because I'd bring it out and I'd do the whole thing. Bless you. Bless you. We're so blessed. Bless you. Bless you. And I mean no disrespect. Trust me. Me and Jesus, we're homeboys today. But, you know, that's what I choose. But somebody can stand up here and talk about Eastern religion. They can talk about the Dalai Lama. They can talk about Tupac Oprah. They can talk about everybody, right? And it's fine. It just rolls right off your back. I'm sure right up in this neck of the woods, you guys got a lot of that happening. You know what I'm saying? But you mentioned Jesus. People go, did she say Jesus? I believe she said it about 12 times. Yeah, yeah. But the truth of the matter is, guys, is what I learned is after about 3 years, now I'm 6 years sober and I'm losing it. I'm absolutely losing it because I am seeking this God, not experientially. I am desperately doing Bible studies and this and that. I can't find it. And I'm miserable. You talk about restless, irritable, and discontent. See, I believe God gave us this book because we're missing so many filters that this book keeps me grounded. You can put any other religious book under it you want. Don't put it over it. Because, see, we aren't like normal people. We are outright mental defects, full flight from reality, cannot differentiate the true from the false. We don't get over that. I'm telling you, you hurt, threaten, or interfere with anything, watch me go crazy. I mean, I need a short chain anyway. I'm sure you've already picked up on that. You know what I'm saying? I always like to use Tom Ivester and Clancy. Do I need to say any more? Okay. I need a short chain. And if you step in the way of something, there's no pause when agitated. If you hurt, threaten, or interfere with me, I'm a reactor. I'm better than I've ever been. I got a toolkit, an amazing toolkit that I can reach into. And here's what I found is so cool, guys. What used to last a month, this bondage of self, right? What used to last a month went down to lasting 2 weeks, went down to lasting a week. Now it lasts a day, maybe only even an hour. See, that's the difference. But I step away from those 12 steps, I'm back in that month. I'm figuring out how to burn your house down. Because I don't like the way you put your garbage cans out. See, that's who we are. Welcome to our fellowship. I love people always, you know, if you come close to me like you've sprouted wings, I am running for the hills. Actually, I really want to follow you around just to point out your defects is really what I want to do, but so be it. Okay, so I am one of the lucky ones, right? You know, I've fallen into this deal. I've done church now, and now I'm moving on, and all of a sudden I come home to Joe, and I said, oh my God, Joe. I said, I am not doing well at all. And he goes, neither am I, Katie. And he's always had 6 years more than me, right? So he's got 12 years sober. And I said, what should we do? And he said, we need to go back to AA. And I said, you bet we do. So we go down to the noon meeting at the clubhouse. We walk in there. There's Ed H. Oh, my God, I love Ed H. And he's sitting in there, and we look at all the people, and I leaned over to Joe, and I patted him on the leg, and I said, Joe, we're home. We're back with our people, my tribe. And I'd love to say we skipped down the yellow brick road, guys, and this is where it got very bumpy. Because now I'm 6 years sober, he's 12 years sober, and we got this deal. We're back in meetings. We're getting that relief. And what I didn't realize is we entered into what I call meeting-based sobriety. And that's where you just go to meetings. You really don't ever write inventory again. You sponsor people, but you sponsor them more like a life coach. You make an amends if necessary. You know, I mean, you obviously can see where you've stepped on the toes of somebody and they're pissed off at you. You go tell them, hey, sorry, man, I was having a bad day. I always got to preface it with what was happening to me as to why I treated you so poorly, right? And that's how we were doing for 10 years. And what I didn't realize is, see, you can go into an AA meeting and get relief, but you do not get connected to the freedom that is required for this level of selfishness and self-centeredness. So that's why I needed a meeting every day. Because I'd get that relief until tomorrow when I need another meeting. And I need somebody to share something that will speak to me. And so, and I love what it says in the book, guys. It says on page 25, if you are as serious alcoholic as we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. I guarantee there's somebody sitting in this room with an intolerable situation, sitting in meetings, intolerable situation with time. And the other was to accept spiritual help. The term middle of the road, you know, it comes straight out of our book. I didn't realize I'd hitched my wagon to middle of the road. I didn't realize I was doing meeting-based sobriety. I thought I was doing the deal. And for 10 years, that's what I did. I knew where my big book was. I knew on the shelf where it was. I took kind of great comfort in knowing that. But what I didn't realize is I wasn't doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And remember, in our triangle, it's recovery, unity, and service. Recovery, as far as I know, is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I suffer from the disease of alcoholism, the only treatment we know in AA, we're not saying we have the corner marketed, or the market cornered, or whatever the saying is, but something along those lines, you got it. Yeah. If I screw up, work with me. But what I do know is that those 12 steps treat alcoholism. Yes, we're all in agreement with that. If I'm not working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of them, then I'm not treating my alcoholism. So I'm in untreated alcoholism. People call it dry, flat, period. I like to call it what it is, man. It'll kill you. It'll absolutely kill you. You know people who have gone out. You know people who have killed themselves. People with time go out. Of course they do. Because alcohol treated my alcoholism, did not cause my alcoholism. See, I always thought alcohol caused it. I didn't realize it's the only thing that treated this beast of self-centeredness that I walk around with. See, I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. I only think of myself. How everyone affects me. How you're looking at me. How you're perceiving me. That's all I think of. And when you step away far enough from not having your pulse on that level of self-centeredness, it gets out of hand real quick. Real quick. And if you're not careful, you'll do what I do. You got to find a sick AA meeting. And there was 12 of us that were sick in Untreated Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm telling you what, when you're sitting in a sick meeting, you can sit in there for a long time. Because nobody calls you on anything. Matter of fact, we talk about all these other people in AA, how they're all about the big buck. They're all about this, all this stuff. And we just sat in that sick meeting getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And so, Joe, this is where it really gets bad, guys. I can't begin to tell you. I became what you know, I was a slogan slinger. When you don't have much of an AA program, the best you can do is sling slogans, right? And somebody comes up and they're hurt and you go, well, hey, easy does it. Turn it over. Love and tolerance, that's our code. I just wanted to punch you if you ever said that to me when I was hurting. Well, I'll show you some love and tolerance. You guys are driving me crazy, man, because see, you're just so wound so tight, right? And God becomes that pinch hitter. And I'm like, God's will, Katie's will, God's will, Katie's will, God's will, Katie's will. I'm passing it back and forth. It's a bad, bad day. Bad, bad day. And really, guys, if you think about it, you know, a lot of people, this is something that people threw at me when I would go to other meetings. They'd say, acceptance, that's the key. And I'd look at him, and I really did want to punch him. I'm like, did you just not hear my situation? And you want to lob that out? And what I understand today is that they were giving me the promises. So they're giving me the promises, hoping the steps come true. See, work the promise, the steps come true. No. I need to work the steps so that the promises come true. So today what I do when I see somebody in AA hurting, all you got to do is wait till everybody's laughing and look around the room at the person who's not laughing. And afterwards, you go up to them and say, look, I picked up that you don't look like you're doing very good. And they go, no, I'm not doing well at all. I go, what's going on, man? I'm furious. I just feel like I'm dead inside. Well, my job is being the vessel. Step outside. Let's talk for a little bit. I'll get them. If they start saying, you know what, I hate my boss, I go, well, let's write a quick inventory. Let's do a quick four-column inventory. I don't care if you have a sponsor. I'm capable of doing a quick four-column inventory with you. That's my responsibility. Wouldn't you say so? So today I get it. Instead of just patting them on the back saying, keep on coming back, I take them outside. I tell you what, it's unbelievable. I can't guarantee they're going to stay sober, but it's amazing what happens in my life. The gift is not that I stayed sober. How self-centered is that statement? It's my duty. It's my duty to help you in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I see you hurting. I better take the time. Okay, I may not be able to go to the gym. I may be 15 minutes late coming back to work. But I'll take you aside and try to do the quickest work I can with you. I'll try to get you into that book. And when you give somebody the solution, it happens like that. Don't underestimate the power that is in that book. And so that's what I've learned today. I look around the rooms for the guy that's not laughing. And they're all throughout Alcoholics Anonymous, trust me. And so one of the other things that I love so much, guys, is when you have this message of depth and weight, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, See, if right now you know you couldn't sponsor a new guy because you wouldn't really know what to tell him, that's an indicator. That is an indicator right there. I remember when somebody said, what do you do for the new guy? I avoid him like the plague. I got nothing, man. Put the plug in the jug, 90 meetings in 90 days, and please don't call me because I don't know what else to tell you. You know what I mean? And today, oh my gosh, you know, you go through these big books. I mean, I got a message of depth and weight. I can sit down there with you and I can do the deal. And I have that confidence in myself that I didn't have. That's what I tell my sponsees. I'm right there with you, man. Go do the deal. I am right there with you. I have taught you how to give a fatal dose of alcoholism in step one. Go out there and try it. Well, here's what ends up happening. Joe and I are 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We're sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're both just, man, we're barely hanging on again. Now, fast forward. I'm 16 years sober. He's in his 20 years of sobriety, right? 22, 23 years. You can't tell us nothing. Nothing. Are you with me on that? Nothing. I know everything. And AA ain't gonna work. My problems are different. See, you don't understand. And so my husband gets sick. Sick, sick, sick. We're both self-employed. What has he got to do? His psychiatrist says, it's organic. What the hell does that mean? I'm thinking a pot. I mean, come on. When you hear organic, do you think of Whole Foods? I mean, you go, what organic? What do you mean? He goes, I think something's growing in his head. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, I think something. We need to go have him take him into the hospital for some tests. Well, we both have catastrophic insurance. You think that's going to hurt, threaten, or interfere with something? My God, I'm sitting in untreated alcoholism. I don't know it, and you're scaring the crap out of me with that statement. So what do? I'm sitting in my sick meeting, and a girlfriend comes up to me, and I'm talking about it, right? You raise your hand right away. You know, my husband's sick. I'm scared to death. You got no solution. Just scared to death. And she said, you know, Katie, have you ever thought about being a school bus driver? I'm a fitness professional. I can fit school bus driving in. That shouldn't be too hard. I'll do that for about 6 weeks. And think about it, guys. When you talk about this level of selfishness and self-centeredness, I did not think about the school district. I did not think about those families with the school bus driver. I didn't think about anybody. I'm doing it for 6 weeks. I'm getting the medical insurance. I'm not hurting anyone. Are you with me on that? See, my husband is sick, and I need to do what I need to do. So I go down there, and I get the job with the school bus. Oh, my God, let me tell you, first of all, it's the cutest school bus driver they had. That was for sure. I mean, wowza. And just becoming a school bus driver was, I was in way over my head. I remember driving that bus going, oh, I am getting him to the hospital tomorrow. We're going to be done with this. So I tell Joe, I call his primary care physician, and he said, Katie, just take him into the emergency room. They're running through a gamut of tests, but just get his head scanned. So I'll take him into the emergency room. I said, listen, you know, I understand they're going to ask you a series of questions. You know, if they say touch your nose, you touch your nose. They say touch your elbow, you touch your elbow. And I mean, when they say touch your nose, you touch your elbow. You fail this test. No matter what, fail it. Joe, you got it? Got it, Katie. He goes in there because we're getting the test, right? See, I want off the bus. Are you with me? I've got the bus only so long that I can get the brain scanned. So we go in there, and the doctor says, so he looks at me, he goes, so you think there's something wrong with his brain? It's like, yes, I do. I have a little thing for doctors anyway. Whatever. Yes, I think he does. And so the doc goes, well, let's just run him through a gamut of tests. He goes, Joe, why don't you touch your nose? And Joe goes, I'm like, oh, my God. Dude, you are blowing it. You are blowing the test. Come on, you guys got to be with me in this one. When, you know, I love it on page 60 to 63. It says, I'm the actor running the whole show. He is blowing the show. And that's going to directly affect me on the bus. Are you with me? And so I'm over there behind the dock going, go back to the plan. And so the doc says, you know, he's looking, Joe's passing all the tests, and he finally says, you know, 2 plus 2, and Joe can't add 2 plus 2. And so the doc says, we're going to go ahead and take him and scan his brain. I thought, finally. So they go scan his brain. He comes back, and Joe and I are sitting there, and the doc walks in. He puts his hand right here. I'll never forget this moment, man. He puts his hand right here, and he goes, by God,
He has got a gigantic mass in his brain. It's about the size of my fist. It's huge. And at that very moment, I remembered my very first thought was, I'm going to drive this damn school bus forever. See, that's the level of selfishness and self-centeredness we live with, guys. You got it too. It's not just me. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't say that to my husband. And look at him go, oh, for God's sakes, I got a broken one. You know, I hugged him and loved on him. But that was my very first thought. That's how self-centered I am. Oh, let me tell you something, man. I ended up driving that school bus for 3 years. 3 years. Because my husband had to have that insurance. And we thought it was a lymphoma. It ended up being benign. He was going to live. It was amazing. I mean, amazing. I'd love to tell you, amazing stuff happened. I'd love to tell you, we skipped down the yellow brick road. We were just so grateful. We were in untreated alcoholism. When you're in untreated alcoholism, nothing looks good. I am in constant collision with something or somebody because I'm literally driving the bus all the time. Oh, my God, let me tell you guys. I mean, I'm trying to run my profession. The doc says he's never going to work another day in his life. You think that'll scare you? You're a two-income family. You got a kid in college. You got another little one that's just an absolute pain in the ass. Are you with me? Oh, my God. I mean, I'm spinning the plates. I you know, I can fry up the bacon. You know, I can do it all, but I am losing my mind. And I'm on that bus, stark raving sober. And you cannot imagine, guys. There was a couple of times, I got to be honest with you. You know, people say, well, I mean, I don't lie. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You lie when you get scared enough. You just absolutely lie. Now, you may go clean it up, but you do lie. And I lie, too. And I'm on that school bus, and there's about five little elementary school kids in the back, and they're all boys, and they just loved it when I fly over these two humps, and they'd all get in the back, and they'll, come on, Miss Kate, every day. Come on, Miss Kate, come on. Come on, Miss Kate, fly us over those humps, you know. And I'm like, man, guys, you know, I'm going to get in trouble. And so I said, okay, fine, get in the back of the bus, get in the back of the bus. So they're all running the back of the bus, you know, and I could shoot over these two humps really. You know, you got to gas that gas bus, and you fly over these things, and then you have to come to an immediate stop and take a right. And so the kid, and you could shoot them five seats, man. I mean, you could really shoot them high. And so I go, okay, because it was all boys. If there'd have been a girl in the bunch, it wouldn't have happened, man. So, you know, so I go, okay, get ready. I just, boo! And we go shooting over those things, and I have to hit the brakes. And when I hit the brakes, the back end of the bus goes, doop! And I mean, I'm like this. It's kind of like, what the hell just happened? And I swear, they all go. And we all get off the bus and we go back there. I have blown all four valve stems off the bus. Off the wheels. That's a bad day. That's a bad day. See this? I can't lose this job. Oh my God. And these boys just, pew, they're gone. Pew. And I'm standing there, and I swear to God, you guys, I'm like this. I get on the horn. Turtle bus to base. Turtle bus to base. Yeah, turtle bus, go ahead, this base. I said, I have no idea what happened. I came over the hill, and the next thing I know, man, I got four flats. I got all the valve stems blew off. And I swear to God, the boss has always got his radio on him, right? I'm talking to the dispatch guy. And the boss goes, what? I said, yeah, I can't even believe it. It just happened. So the guy comes to look, you know, and he drives, because we ain't going nowhere. You know what I'm saying? I ain't moving. And the guy comes to look, and I swear he looks up the hill. He sees those two humps, and he looks at me, and he goes, so you don't know what happened? I went, nope. See, I can't lose that job. That's what happens. That's somebody with 15 years sobriety. I'm lying, lying, lying. And that's what I had to do, and he goes, okay. And, of course, he had to give me a ride back because we ain't going nowhere. I mean, that bus was just like a dinosaur sitting there. And I got to tell you guys, though, as crazy as it is, this bus job, you talk about a sense of entitlement that we have. Are we in agreement there? I need more heads nodding, you know, right? Sometimes I think I'm talking to the PTA. You know, you're looking at me like this. It's like, oh, come on. And so you know, this is my sense of entitlement. There was a BMW guy who, you know, when a school bus is in your neighborhood, you know when it's there at the same time every morning, right? And you don't want to be behind the school bus because that's going to screw up your morning, right? Because you're running late because alcoholics always run late. And so, oh, I love the one that's timely out there going, no, I'm always timely. Oh, be sure, check that off your list. And so what ends up happening is this BMW would come at me and he'd start gassing it when he was coming to me. And I thought, you are not going to pass me. And I just kicked those reds out. No bus stop. Just kick it out. And he'd go. And I go, who's got the power now, dude? Huh? And I swear he would look at me and go, got the power of the reds behind me. Ah. I mean, I was just crazy. One time, you're never supposed to get off the bus route, right? You got to stay on the bus route. Well, you know how we are with rules. Well, it was the year of election as it's coming up, and I wanted to vote, and I needed to get it in. And voting was just two streets over. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to run over there. There's no kids on the bus. Nobody will see me. Big yellow bus. And so I go over there and I run in to go vote, man. And I'm like, you know, standing in line. You know how you're like this. Hurry, hurry, hurry. And so I vote real fast. And I come flying out and I don't even realize it, but I have forgotten to turn my reds off. And so my reds are on and there's about a mile and a half of cars stop. Yeah. Because nobody's passing the reds. They think the cops have set them up. Now I know there's a cop somewhere. I ain't doing it. I'm not passing them. There's nobody on that bus. I ain't doing it. But you know, guys, what I didn't realize is here's the line in the book. Once again, remember, I didn't read my book. I read my book in the first 3 years of sobriety, kind of. And then I hoped in AA meetings that you had read it. I'd hoped you'd spout something off in AA meetings. But what ended up happening to me is I was in over my head. That's how I can always tell when I'm in self-will run riot. I'm in over my head. I'm keeping score. I'm doing revenge in my head. Oh, it's a dangerous place for me. Dangerous place for me. And I'm living in the bedevilments. On page 52, it says we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. The new term for fear today is anxiety. Don't let it fool you. It's still fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to others. This is what I didn't realize, guys. The bedevilments are available in sobriety. See, I thought this was all based on drinking. And so what ended up happening is I have literally three panic attacks, blow-in-the-bag panic attacks, in sobriety. One time my husband, bless his heart, with brain damage, he gave me a plastic bag. That's bad news. Yeah. When you're having that panic attack and you got to blow in a bag, just picture a plastic bag. He's like, you know, and he's like, honey, I'm thinking, I can't talk, man. I'm over here losing it. And so what did I do? Of course I went to a doctor. See, when you invite a doctor in and you're in untreated alcoholism, he's only doing his job. See, you bring this to a doctor, he's not going to say you need a spiritual awakening, Katie. By golly, you just need a spiritual awakening. He's going to say you need an antidepressant. And what I didn't realize, guys, and don't get me wrong, oh my God, am I going to talk about antidepressants? No, thank you. Everybody gets in an uproar. But of course I got on them. I had no idea I was in untreated alcoholism. I don't suffer from depression. I suffer from alcoholism. Do some people in our room suffer from depression? You bet they do. And I always tell the guys I work with, I'm not going to make you get off, but we're going to work these 12 steps. And if you see that maybe you were put on them because you were suffering from untreated alcoholism, that will be your decision. But I'm telling you what, guys, I didn't need them. And here's what frightens me more than anything. So I got this malady on me. Are you with me on that one? And something as simple as a root canal can take one of us out with time. All of a sudden you got a root canal, you go to the doctor and he says, you know, you're going to need some Vicodin. And you go, I certainly am, aren't I? You betcha. And then he gives you the Vicodin. And what I don't realize is when I'm in the malady, it triggers the allergy. See, if I'm not in the malady, the Vicodin doesn't even feel good.
I don't even want to take it because God makes it work for medicine. But when I have malady on me, I start taking those Vicodin. I see more people in AA go out behind something so simple as Vicodin. It's heartbreaking. Before you know it, they're just scheduling more dental work. And I think I got another root canal, doc. Oh, you know. And that's what ends up happening in this fellowship. And it's happening all around us, guys. And how do you handle somebody in untreated alcoholism? Dicey. Dicey, dicey, dicey. You don't call them out in a meeting. You don't come at them and go, you're not working an AA program. The book says we are to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And so if anything I'm saying here you're disagreeing with, man, I'm just coming out of my own experience. My husband at 23 years ended up dying of a heroin overdose. He ended up going back out because he talked some doctors into Adderall, of all things. Adderall. And the Adderall led to Clonopan. Clonopan led to led to. And the next thing you know, he did a shot of dope that killed him. 23 years sober. So when I talk about untreated alcoholism, I am very passionate. It hit very close to home. You almost lost me. Had it not been for Charlie, he was my best friend. He drugged me around, drugged me, and he was in untreated alcoholism too. I always love to say that. He always thinks he was Mr. AA. You know, I came to him and I told him, I said, Charlie, I am not doing well at all, man. I got the monkey on my back. I am freaking out. But see, pride will keep you sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It darn sure will, right up till you drink. I don't know when that'll be. But I was scared to death, and I told Charlie, he was the first one I told. And he said, and I loved it, he said something so lame and it worked. It was lame. He said, Katie, just don't drink without me. I thought, what does that mean? But I did. I mean, I hung in there for a few more months, and the next thing you know, boy, when you're in the lifeboat, God takes you down there. I had a willing heart to want to do something. I had no idea that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous were the solution. I would have told you, I have done those 12 steps. I know what they'll bring me. This ain't it. I got big problems. My husband is dead. You know, I got big problems. This ain't working. And I mean to tell you, the unrest, these bedevilments are so dark. I know I'm talking to some people that have been in these bedevilments. I can't even drive by the apartment I used to live in. It has so much pain in it. I just drive by there and I just think, it was so dark. 18 months, it was so dark. My son would open my bedroom door and I'd go, shut it! Shut it! I'm scaring the crap out of my son. He's already lost his dad. It's a big problem, guys. It's a big problem. And here's the thing. The 12 steps of alcohol... Shut up. You're telling me the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is what I need? Shut up. So we end up running into Mark Houston. We run into Bob Darrell. I swear to God, I believe they saved my life. How they got through to me, I have no idea. I'm not an easy person to get through to. When my ego rebuilds, I got a big old F-U behind it. Are you with me on that one? I mean, you know, and I love it. There are people in this room that act like they don't have it. Oh, they got it all up there. Mine just shoots out of my mouth, right? I mean, I go down that mudslide fast. But these people spoke to me, and I sat and listened because we know solution. We know it. Everybody in this room knows it when they hear it. And I started listening to these guys, and I started getting into the book with these guys, and I started following them. I followed them like crazy, man, and I was just into it. And I picked this sponsor out. Now, keep in mind, this all kind of happened simultaneously. So I picked this sponsor out of the rooms, and I have no idea she's in untreated alcoholism, but God keeps putting her in my face. And I end up getting her as my sponsor. She knew Joe had died, and I'm in this 18-month period of this dark spot. We're getting ready. We're meeting Bob. We're meeting Mark Houston. We're meeting Chris Raymer. We're meeting these folks. And some people may have some problems with some of them. Well, they saved my life. You know, so be it. So be whatever you got with them. They carried the message to me. And so I call my sponsor, and I'm telling her all about Joe and how dark I am and this deal and that deal and this deal. And she said, you know, Katie, I want you to read 60 to 63. And I remembered thinking, that's probably the part of the book that says, some of us had it harder than others. Surely that's got to be in there. I haven't really gotten in with Bob and them yet, right? So I get my big book out and I open it up. And I happen to open it up to page 62 where it says selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. And I swear to God, I thought, that bitch. That was my first thought. And I don't like to cuss from the podium, but it's an effective story. And I don't just say that. I pick the phone up and I call her. I go, what are you doing? Did you not hear what I said? And she said, Katie, there's a fine line between sorrow and self-pity. And I believe you've crossed it. And at that point in my life, I was able to hear it. And I really do believe, guys, a moment of clarity is of no value if not followed by action. And that was when we met Mark, and that's when we met Bob, and this whole deal just came together for me. And oh my God, let me tell you, I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea. And I really believe she was in untreated alcoholism. I was in untreated alcoholism. I believe if two people's hearts are in the right place, God takes up a ton of slack. And he put both of us in that lifeboat, and he carried us the whole way. And it's unbelievable. Today I look back at it, and Marty sponsors 20 people. She's amazing. She is the greatest sponsor I've ever had. She lives in 60 to 63. My troubles are always of my own making, period. Katie, where did you set the ball rolling? Where did you make decisions based on self? Where were you a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? A producer of confusion rather than harmony? Because see, if I want to be free today, the problem has got to be me. See, a death wish is when somebody says, man, he shouldn't have treated you that way. Really? Really? I agree with you. He is an idiot. And that's what ends up happening. That's a very, very dangerous place for me to go. I told you my ego was a shapeshifter, right? And that's what it ends up doing. And I have learned that even if you're wrong, 110% wrong, I come clean it up. The book says we go to the man we hate. Who better do you hate than the person who has done you wrong? And I can't begin to tell you the freedom behind that. Now, that's not what I want to do. But I take the high road. I can't be... When the book says, as ex-problem drinkers, our very lives depend upon the constant thought of others, that's not in my DNA to think of you. I'm sorry, it is not. I don't have that filter. But the closer I get to God, all of a sudden my prayer and meditation is all about you. It's like you guys are all in my prayer and meditation. I'm reading something in Sermon on the Mount, and all of a sudden I think that I need to share that with you. And that is the part where I didn't know it. When it says I've entered the world of the Spirit, I'm not doing it because I want you to do something for me. And that's the tricky part, guys. You know, 60 to 63 is all about self-seeking even when trying to be kind. Yes, it's obvious when I'm trying to work an angle. But when I'm trying to be kind, I'm absolutely blinded to it. How many of you guys are pissed off at your home group? You did something good for them, and they didn't appreciate it, did they? Yep, right there. And somebody says, well, I thought you were just supposed to do that. Well, I did. I just did it for them. Bastards. You know what I mean? In Texas, you know what we say? God bless him. He's such a jerk, you know. But you always stick a God bless him on there, and it kind of gives you that God thing on that. You know what I'm saying? And so, but that's what ends up happening. See, behind a good motive, it says that I'm the actor trying to run the whole show. If everyone would behave as I wished, if you people would just follow the memo I gave you this morning. Is that too much to ask? See, and when I don't get my way, I become more demanding or gracious. What's the paragraph on 61 says? It's a phone call that every sponsor gets from their sponsee. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. All of a sudden, they begin to think life doesn't treat them right. On the next occasion, they become more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. That's what we are. We're chameleons, man. You try to take something back to a store that you know you're too late on your receipt, and you walk in so nice, don't you? Yeah, hi, cute outfit. Love those glasses. Hey, listen, I need to return these shoes. And they look at it and go, oh, it's beyond. We can't, no story. I'm sorry, we can't do it. We become more demanding or gracious. Where's the manager? See, and this is what we do too, guys. I'm asking this girl to break the rules for me. It's no big deal. It's just a couple of days. It's her job I just asked her to put on the line. I don't see it that way.
Because my motive is really not that bad. I'm still going to just exchange. Can't we work something out here?
See, and that's what I do everywhere I go. I love this one. Nobody parks in a handicapped spot, right? Well, that's just wrong. Until I think I left my keys in Walgreens last week when I'm pulling out of the parking lot. And the parking spots are way far away. And I got to whip into that handicapped spot. So I leave my door open. I actually kind of limped. But I just chuckle. Another thing I do, I don't text and drive. Unless it's an emergency. See, and that's what we do, guys. When it's me doing it, there's nothing wrong. See, that's what I don't get. I'm an absolute hypocrite. Mercy for me, justice for you when you do it. And that's what ends up happening. See, I don't even know I have a motive till you piss me off. Then thank God for the inventory process. Because in the inventory process, I'm going to see it from an entirely different angle. I'm going to begin to understand what this is all about. And what other angle am I going to see it from? I'm going to see it from your angle. My sponsor is going to give me your angle. I only see it through my angle. And that's the part that gets me in so much trouble. It is a death wish if you sign those papers. And if you hang with people that you do, it is even worse. Are you in agreement with me on that one? This is a disease of alcoholism. It is progressive. The only thing we know is to have a spiritual awakening behind this deal. And so what do we do? I love what the process is about, right? It says a vigorous course of action. What is a vigorous course of action? 4 through 9. 4 through 9 is my vigorous course of action. Not 4 and 5. Not sit on 6 and 7. It's all the way through. It's like a golf swing. Then we do the 10th step, right? We do amazing stuff happens in the men's process. We do the 10th step. And when we get to that 10th step, that is the continuation of 4 through 9. They're just condensed. And that's where I keep alive is in the 10th step. Spot check inventory. Written inventory if it gets out of hand. 11th step, my evening review, my prayer and meditation. I'm keeping my finger on the pulse of my self-centeredness. In my prayer and meditation, you want to pray for world peace? Have at it. It's a great prayer. But what does the book tell me I got to do? I got to ask God to divorce me from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives every day. Having just made conscious contact with God, we're going to pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd thoughts and actions. That's every day for me. I just make my conscious contact. I've got an amazing toolkit, but I may not use it. And then, of course, it's my duty to sponsor. It absolutely is my duty to sponsor. So I ask myself, are you working all 12 steps? I work a fundamental basic AA program. I really, really do. And let me tell you guys, I'm on a short chain. I really am. At any given time, I can misbehave poorly. Because I'm going to. The book never says you're not going to. Matter of fact, it promises me that I am going to. So when somebody says, how much time do you have? You should behave differently. I'm always like, you've got a clear misunderstanding of this disease. I think a lot of us do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so what ends up happening, guys, is I had no idea the answers were in the book. No idea the answers were in the book. I absolutely love studying the book. Something else pops out at me. So all I have to say is I believe that there are people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that are dying of alcoholism from untreated alcoholism. I believe that 100%. And so if you're that guy, there is a solution. And that is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you are in the book, man, more power to you. If you're not in the book, please get in the book. If you are, I'll see you on the firing lines. Thanks for having me.